Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired. Lauren is not around this week. And in fact, I'm not around this week either. We have slipped out of our cozy studio in the San Francisco office, and we're here in the wilds, in the high desert of Las Vegas, Nevada, to cover the cavalcade of gadgets that is CES 2024. I'm in this very posh and cozy hotel room with three of my colleagues. So we apologize. The audio is not going to be entirely professional, but we are doing our best, people. I tell you, we're doing our best. I have here with me, to my right, the awesome Wired senior editor, Jeremy White.
Hello.
Hello. Sitting across from me is Wired senior reviews editor, Julian Chokatu.
Hello.
Hello, Julian. And over here to my left, but not least, Wired senior associate reviews editor, Adrian So.
Hi.
Hi, Adrian. All right, everybody. How's everybody doing? Having a good show?
I'm just about surviving, yeah, to be honest with you.
I am having a great time, and it just keeps getting better.
Today was a peak.
Yes. Yeah, we really did. Yeah. We really did it today, Julian. We nailed CES.
So most people listening to the show know what CES is. Julian, can you give us a quick primer for anybody who may not know what the hell we're talking about when we say those three words, those three letters?
Sure, yeah. CES is the Consumer Electronics Show. It's been around for more than 100 years, I believe. it's that long. And it's sort of the place where, you know, everyone goes to see all the latest technology that comes out from all over the world. It's gadgets from TVs to speakers to cars and all sorts of things. And it sort of sets the tone for the rest of the year in terms of what you can sort of expect to see from the tech world and how, you know, companies are looking at things and what you can sort of expect, the types of products you can expect to see coming out to market for the rest of 2024.
Nice. That was very good, succinct CES primer.
Work for CTA or something.
And it's also the one place in time where 90% of the people have Androids instead of iPhones.
This is probably true in some way. Yeah, I saw a lot of Pixels.
You saw some Pixel Folds in the one.
I saw a couple of Pixel Folds, yeah. So very unusual. They definitely did not work for Google. They did not look like they worked for Google. So I did make sure.
Nice. So one of the things that we were expecting coming into this week was that the hype about AI that we've seen overtake the consumer tech industry in the last year would be here full force, because people have had a year to prepare to put AI into all their products. We were expecting to see a lot of products with AI in them. And I think the consumer technology industry delivered on that promise.
Hell yeah. It reminded me of when digital assistants first came out, really. And they had that, we had that glorious year of when they shoved digital assistants into absolutely everything. You had the microwave, you had absolutely, you had kettles, you had, you know, walk around robots. It was in absolutely everything. And it reminds me of that this year. It's like, oh my God, we've got another version of this, a pimped version of that. Let's put it in everything and then work out what on earth to do with it later.
Yeah.
I did encounter one moment of what I thought was going to be common sense when I was speaking to one CEO who said, you know, good quality in is good quality out. And that's why we don't have suggestive AI in our product. And then a moment later, she said, so it will be coming out in the next month or the next year or so. And I was like, okay, so, you know, we're being restrained right now.
Right. Because if you don't put AI in your thing, then somebody's going to come along and make a version of your thing with AI in it. And then you're going to be out on the curb.
Yeah, for real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I weirdly feel like the companies I saw that were sort of not really talking about the generative AI part of it were the more interesting ones that actually had a use case for that application that made sense versus a lot of the other companies that were like, AI, and then you'd ask them, what does it do? And they're like, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, cool. That was just generally, you know, a lot of AI and everything. Then you definitely have to try and parse out exactly what it is the AI is doing. Turns out, like 75% of the time, not much or
right.
Nothing interesting really or helpful to the nature of the product.
Right.
So, yeah.
There's a lot of things with ChatGPT capability in it this year.
Yes.
It wasn't just that, though, as well. Is that like you had things like there was a bird feeder. There was a smart bird feeder that used AI to recognize over 10,000 species of birds.
I want that.
So we had it was just in everything.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, even the bird feeder made more sense than a lot of the other much more expensive products you come across, because at least they had something to do with it. Oh, we're going to identify birds. It's like, yes, okay, I can. That's a use case that has value.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, as Julian said, you go, "What on earth are you doing that for?"
Yeah.
But yeah, ChatGPT, absolutely.
Yeah, and the use case that I saw on my beat a lot was AI stain detection for floors and robot vacuums. And every time I saw it, I had to refrain. I had to physically hold my face back from saying that iRobot has had dirt detect since 2004. So do we need AI for all the things that AI is doing? I'm not really sure.
I mean, AI, I mean, this has been a thing, though, for like at least 5 to 6 years where AI is just a substitute for like smart. You know, it's a smart gadget, and it, you know, AI just doesn't really mean anything in this context. So, like, even what you said, like, you know, dirt detect, that's a smart application, but there's no, like, you know, way of AI actually doing anything in that.
Yeah,
in that
it's product. It's not continually improving upon itself,
right,
in the process of finding more and sophisticated kinds of dirt in your home. The flagship product in one of my beats was the ChatGPT enabled electric bike, which I was prepared to find as a load of complete hooey, but I actually ended up liking quite a bit.
About ChatGPT and a bike makes it good?
Okay, so what this bike is, the CEO told me, don't think of it as a bike. Think of it as a very large phone that you ride on, which is just priceless. But like, you can ask it, you know. It didn't start off promising. I asked it to find me coffee, and it told me I could use a French press, so that was not a good start. But afterwards, like, I finally figured out the use case, and then I asked it to, you know, like, help me take a ride around Vegas, help me sightsee on a 2-hour bike ride around Vegas, and it just helped me point out a route. It was going to navigate, you know, and you could add points of interest and that kind of thing. Like, that's the sort of use case where I finally had to concede, like, okay, you know, maybe my bike can be my friend. So,
I mean, to an extent, I feel like that functionality will at some point just be your phone, and it doesn't need to be in the bike.
But right? What if your phone was your bike?
Yeah. And you could ride on it?
What? What if you could check your bike while you're watching TV? All right. I don't know where.
Well, Jeremy, you cover the automotive industry for us, and you've been covering it for a long time, and I'm sure you've had a lot of experience playing with all the different voice assistants in the cars that have been coming out over the last 10 years. Now that people are putting ChatGPT into cars, is it getting any better?
Well, but it can't get any worse. this is the situation we're in. You're right. I mean, a number of car manufacturers announced some sort of version, some sort of LLM, sort of large language model in their vehicles. VW have actually got in ChatGPT into their cars now. Now, what this actually means really is some sort of pimped version of a voice assistant. And that's the examples they gave it. So on stage, they say, okay, well, you want to go somewhere? Okay, before you would ask, say, I'm hungry, show me restaurants, and or take me to restaurants. And it was sort of possible with a following wind, it would be able to do that for you. Now you can have a slightly more complicated query, like, I'm hungry for butter chicken, and then it knows what you're talking about, and then it can take you to curry restaurants nearby and things like that.
Right.
That's the difference. I mean, it's not much more than that. They want it to be slightly conversational, but it's only just a little bit more so. And when you talk to them about whether this is going to transform how we live with our cars and be in our cars, they don't really have any solid answers on whether it will or not.
Hmm. Well, while we're on the topic of cars, can we talk about flying cars?
My favorite topic.
This is not a topic that is new to you as somebody who covers CES every year.
That's the thing. I've been knocking, doing down flying cars all my career, really. And here I am at CES. And the thing I've written most about is a flying car.
Yeah.
And it makes me very sad. But this is the thing. There's about three or four flying car companies here showing their wares, and they're, oh, look, this is the thing, now it's coming out. But the big one is actually a company called Supernal, which is an offshoot of the Hyundai Motor Group. So Hyundai Motor Group have Genesis, the EV brand Genesis, they have Kia, they have Hyundai, of course, and they've got Supernal. Supernal is their sort of air cab, their taxi, electric VTOL, so eVTOL, so vertical takeoff and landing. So they've finally announced their proper concept. This is what's going to be made, apparently, and in the skies in 4 years' time.
Nice. And these are not quadcopters, right? They're not just big drones.
They're not big drones. It's not just getting in like eHang, where you just get in and it's automated and it takes you somewhere. This is it's a piloted, so human pilot, and then space for four passengers.
Hmm.
But you can take out the seats and you have no passengers or just two passengers. You can figure out how you like. But it flies up to 20 to 25 minutes, or 25 miles, so 25 to 40 miles, sorry. 25 to 40 miles. And so it's, short journeys, and it flies at 120 miles an hour at 1,500 feet.
I want one.
And they say it's going to be affordable, but it just looks like something for rich people.
Yeah.
It does it, like, it really does. So this is how this instead of helicopters, this is how rich people will get to and from airports, to their office blocks or their penthouses or whatever it is.
The yachts.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And but the design is something else. I mean, all of the rotors tilt up and down, and they don't all tilt in the same direction. So when it's vertically taking off, they don't all tilt upwards. The back ones tilt down, the front ones tilt up to stop the shear forces in the fuselage. So it's incredibly quiet. It's as quiet as I can't quite believe this is true, but they say it's as quiet as a dishwasher.
They have not met my dishwasher.
Okay, I am going to say it may be for rich people, but if I could pay $50 once every 6 months to make my flight and get taken to the airport in a flying car, I would definitely do that, and I would probably make a TikTok about it. It would be awesome.
It is.
I can't wait.
It is. It does look awesome. It is. It's a lovely design, and it's got this sort of hexagonal glass bulb at the front of it, so you can almost see all the way around to the ground, so you can see what you're. They're coming down, the pilot can see. And that whole front shape here, this hexagonal glass, was apparently designed on the shape of a bee's head. It was like biomimicry and stuff. Like, what does a bee's head look like? And what would a bee's head look like if it was going really fast?
When I think of superb flyers, I think bees.
Bees. I know. So what on earth were they thinking? But it's one of those few occasions where this sort of thing is always just around the corner, but they actually made me think, and I could very much live to regret this, they actually made me think that, yeah, they are going to do this.
All right. Well, we only have to wait a few years to find out.
Four.
4 years to find out. Okay, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Okay, Julian, we have to talk about televisions because CES is always a big television show. Everybody brings their crazy concepts and the giant televisions and the super bright projectors. You saw something kind of unique in the world of TVs. Tell us about it.
I saw not one, but two transparent TVs. Although maybe TVs is a bit of a stretch for Samsung because they kind of just showed off a glass screen that was not really a TV and it was just a concept showing off the technology. So LG had an actual transparent television using OLED technology. And, you know, when I first told my wife at the end of the day, oh, I saw a transparent television, she said, why would I want a transparent television? And then I thought about it and I didn't have a great answer other than, you know, LG said you could put it in front of a window and not block the access. And then still when you, the cool thing about this one, it is it has a rollable element mixed in. So when you do want to, you know, watch a normal movie in full normal OLED fidelity, there's this rollable contrast film that rolls up. And so it sort of makes the whole thing opaque, and now you can actually get all that contrast and looks great. And then roll it down and it's transparent and you can still use the television and see content on the screen. And there's going to be different types of user interface elements that are going to be different from a traditional TV. So you can expect things like things just, you know, hovering on the display, like the weather and the clock and things like that. So, you know, there are things that I think I could see a use case for. And obviously this is the first thing that they're launching, and this is the TV, and it's not a concept unlike Samsung's, which is using micro LED, and that was definitely brighter than the OLED version I saw. But, you know, again, Samsung's was just a concept. But LG's is going to be on sale later this year. It's going to be a limited series. The rollable TVs that they announced a few years ago started at $100,000.
Yep.
So I'm going to assume they did not share the price, but I'm going to assume these are going to also cost $100,000, if not more. So this is the sort of thing where you can expect in 4 to 5 years, perhaps this will trickle down and become a lot more affordable. Perhaps this might lead to a transparent phone. Like in Iron Man one day. I don't know. You know, that's all what we're... Iron Man is like the thing that everyone calls back to at CES every year. So I feel like this is another one of those things.
Because of the see-through phone.
Yeah, the see-through phone. Yeah. So it was cool. It's still just one of those things. You know, LG themselves were like, this is going to be really popular with interior designers. And like, when that's your first demographic of your product, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely visually very exciting and very cool to look at. But practically, you know, TV makers seem to really hate the black screen of a TV that when it's turned off, they're constantly saying, you know, your TV's just black in your room. Like right now in this hotel room, the TV's just black. It's just, my God. And like, you guys make these things, right? Like, you hate it so much that that was the one other selling point. Transparent means that you can put art behind your TV or something like that. So, you know, yeah.
Do you know what else is transparent, Julian? Fish tanks. Everyone loves a fish tank.
But interior you can't watch The Witcher on a fish tank.
That
so.
Is true.
But
not yet.
Not yet. One day it'll be baked in. So
yeah, the MGM already working on it.
Yes, actually. Yeah. They did have a fish tank animation, actually. Oh, so my God. We're almost there. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. I am an interior designer. What am I doing here? I should switch careers.
So, Adrian, you cover a lot of wearable technology for Wired. You cover a lot of health tech. Tell us about some of the trends you're seeing in those worlds here at the show.
So as I was getting off the plane into my Lyft to the hotel, the car in front of me had a big billboard for Menopause, the musical, which seems to be everywhere in CES right now. And I don't know if this is one of those cases where, like, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But it feels to me like this is the year that suddenly everybody at CES woke up to the fact that half of the population is like criminally underserved. Like one of the things we highlighted this year was an at-home urinary tract infection test, which can help. Like, here I am. I'm sitting in a room with three dudes. I don't know if any of you even know why a UTI test is so important, but 6 out of 10 women have them. It's one of the most miserable yet common afflictions that people have that nobody really talks about. So the fact that you can diagnose it in under 2 minutes at home and you use your phone app to send the information directly to your doctor was like, that just blew my mind. And all the wearables are coming out with, you know, passive cycle detecting technology. So you can, you know, learn to predict when your period is coming and not, you know, just randomly bleed out when you're just walking around swimming with sharks or whatever it is that you do. And a lot of, you know, in accordance with the billboard that I saw coming in, there is a lot of perimenopause and menopause detection technology when it comes to wearables. And one of the ones that I found was a vasomotor sensor that can automatically detect night sweats and hot flashes, which helps you regulate your sleep disturbances. It's really hard to fall asleep when, you know, you're sweating. And I haven't experienced any of this personally yet, but perimenopause and menopause can last over 10 to 15 years of your life. And half the people on planet Earth, I'm not a scientist or anything. I'm not a biologist. I don't know exactly how many people that is, but half of all the people on Earth is like a lot of people. And they're just half of the people are just going to go through this. And we don't know anything about it. I asked my own doctor about this actually. And he was like, are you sure you want to know? Wouldn't you just rather like see what happens? And that is not a question. That is not something that I've ever said to myself. It just feels like this is the first year where a lot of women are, you know, people are acknowledging that a lot of women really do want more information about what's going on with their bodies.
That's great. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like this is happening at a time when health sensor technology and wearable technology, we've sort of been exploring the limits of what's capable with what we have right now over the last few years, right? Like, there's only so much you can do on somebody's wrist. There's only so much you can do with like a sensor that lives in your toilet that you pee on. So we're sort of getting like to the edges of that. And I think when a device maker looks at, well, what else can we do? This seems like a natural place to go because, like you said, there's not a lot there.
Yeah. A lot of these study cohorts are starting out with like 100 or like 150 women. Like, we just don't know enough yet. There's so many algorithms yet to be developed. Very exciting.
Yeah. One of the other big things that we saw in the world of wearable technology was gesture control, right? This has been creeping into this world over the last year or two.
It's been creeping into this world with, you know, augmented reality and like mixed reality systems and just the way that the digital and physical worlds are interacting, or as I like to say, fidgetal, and I just watched everybody in this room wince simultaneously. But it's like, it's the greatest word. Why would you say hybrid when you could say fidgetal? Like, there are so many different new devices that are letting you interact with the world in different physical, you know, different physical or digital ways. One of the ones that we highlighted was the palm plug, which was really cool. The palm plug attaches sensors to all five of your fingers and the palm of your hands. And that not only does it provide you haptic feedback, like it taps you and you're like gives you vibrations or haptic feedback whenever you're doing something wrong, but it also lights up. There's like a multi-sensory component. I also saw a ring that lets you whisper into it so that you don't have to wear, you know, like a big VR headset or goggles. You can take them outside. You don't have to wear mixed reality glasses. I know you guys saw a bunch of different other things.
Yeah, I saw Double Point, which is like the first time I've ever heard someone making something for Wear OS, which was nice because that platform from Google doesn't really get a lot of third-party action. But Double Point essentially enables any modern Wear OS watch to get the same types of gesture controls that you might see on like an Apple Watch. So there's double tap, and you can use that you can basically use it as a mouse in a browser. The intention here is really using the Wear OS watch you've already bought and wearing as an interface option for mixed reality. So, Apple Vision Pro is coming very soon. We all know that. And they're going all in on hands as the interface tool. And I think that's one trend that we all saw, is that everyone else is now like, right, screw controllers, screw physical, actual hardware, just try and use your hands. And so everyone is trying to find out different ways to do that, whether it's with like a watch or, a camera pointed at your fingers. And that's what it's going to be, which is, essentially what we all expected it to be, because that's what movies have been telling us for years.
So they're calling it all hands.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. Had to go there. Okay, let's take another break and we'll come right back.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the Reviews Director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
All right, so we don't really have like a traditional show this week. I mean, we're in a hotel room, for God's sake, and there's planes taking off outside. So we're not going to do the traditional thing where we go around the room and we ask everybody for a recommendation. But because this is CES, I want to do a lightning round. And I do want to go around the room and ask everybody what the coolest or weirdest or most fun thing that they saw this week was. Jeremy White, you go first.
Without question, the weirdest thing I think I've ever seen at CES is something called WeHead, WeHed, WeHed. And
you forgot WeHed.com.
WeHed.com. It was a beautiful moment at Pepcom, actually, where they're on their sign at the back of the room, they had WeHed, and then they just scrawled in black marker .com next to their brand name. But it was a very small company, as you could tell. But what they had was this, it looked like you see in jewelers' shop windows with those sort of head mannequins where they put jewelry on. But there was something very odd about it, and it was all angular and square. And I went to what on earth is that? And it turned out that it was another thing that they'd shoved ChatGPT into, and it was a voice assistant that you could speak to and be a companion in your home, or it could be some sort of office tool as well, take minutes and so on, or listen to meetings. But it was so physically weird and distracting. I don't know how anybody could live with it. It wasn't a face. It wasn't spherical or round. It was it was sort of angular and made of sort of cuboids. And then as you got closer, you realized it was four Samsung phones. We found out later it was Samsung phones. It was four Samsung phones squashed together in a face-like format with a video of a face on it in almost like Max Headroom gone wrong.
That was my impression of it. It felt like the weird like 80s, very early cyberpunk kind of, yeah, like something out of a Laurie Anderson video.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
And the guy said to me, he said, talk to it. I said, I don't want to. I don't want to talk to it.
I think this guy was capitalizing on a missed opportunity. Why invent your own proprietary hardware when you can just stick four phones together in the shape of a head? I think this was absolute genius. I commend him.
He was very proud of it.
Yes.
He was giving him
my own award.
But the funny thing, as he was talking to me about it, explained to me, Adrian was very kindly trying to video it at the same time as well. And I just couldn't look at her because her eyes were getting wider and wider and wider as he described more and more about this product. It was just bonkers. Look it up, wehead.com. Do them a favor.
It's one of the great things about the show is that people just take the biggest, weirdest swings.
I love it.
Oh my word.
It's fun. It's what makes it fun.
It is. It was worth coming just for that.
It's four phones glued together in the shape of a head.
Yes.
That's the elevator.
That's the elevator pitch. Like someone got in the elevator, I've got an idea for you.
And that person would be like, yes. Check mark.
Julian, tell us about the thing that you saw that you can't get out of your head.
I guess I have to say the Rabbit R1, which, you know, it actually looked very unique and different. It's a pocket-sized device. It's made in collaboration with the design firm Teenage Engineering. So it looks, you know, pretty slick and somewhat retro. There's a little screen on it. There's a scroll wheel, a 360 degree camera on it that you can flip back and forth, and a push to talk button. And when you press and hold the push to talk button, you can basically ask it to perform sort of menial tasks that you would typically do on a smartphone. The interesting thing about this is that it's using a large language model from ChatGPT to understand what you're talking about. And the other side of it is now introducing large action models. And the whole idea is that it's actually understanding and executing on what you want. So this is sort of like a step above the traditional digital voice assistant, where you can actually ask it to, hey, get me an Uber to the airport and also put this on my calendar. It's like mixing your services together in a way that your apps before have never really worked together in that way. But also you can do complex things by basically, you know, the company Rabbit has trained a lot of these normal menial functions, like reserving a dinner at a restaurant. It basically has trained a lot of these rabbits, is what they're calling it, to go out and do these tasks. So you can connect your services to the Rabbit device, the R1, and essentially have it just perform all of these tasks. And the cool thing about this thing is the camera. It's called the Rabbit Eye, and you point it at, like, let's say if you have your laptop open, you do this simple task of, their example was removing a watermark from an image, which is kind of a weird thing to give an example for. But let's say that you're constantly doing that, and you now point the R1 at your laptop screen, and it records what you're doing. So you're essentially teaching it how to do the thing that you are often doing. Now it understands it, it learns it, it now can do the thing that you want it to do. So now you can just press and hold a button and say, hey, remove the watermark from this other image. And it'll now do that, so you don't ever have to do that. And one of the other examples they had given was they were playing the game Diablo 4. The character has to, you know, kill enemies, survive, and level up. They put the camera and, you know, pointed at the screen. They taught the rabbit to, you know, have the character not die, and taught it how to kill the enemies and survive. And they basically are saying that theoretically you can now train a rabbit to keep your game character alive until you hit a certain level. Now you don't have to grind, you know, do all the menial things that you don't really want to do in that game and get to the thing that, you know, is more enjoyable. So the whole idea is take the basic smartphone stuff that you have to do these days that is kind of a little annoying to do on your phone, just ask the thing without having to, you know, touch a, you know, bunch of different different interfaces juggle between apps and all of that.
You're forgetting the most important thing about stuff made by teenage engineering, Julian, which is that I have no clue what most of it does, and I know that most of it is expensive, but it's just so cute that I just want it anyway.
It is very cute. It's surprisingly not that expensive. I mean, it's $199. And again, it's sort of like that weird device that you don't really know if it's going to be useful or not yet. It could be absolutely useless. It could be very cool and very unique. So, you know, it's coming out in March, so we don't have to wait too long to find out.
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know, on the hype wave of things like the Humane AI Pen, writing that sort of ChatGPT personal AI companion, but this is trying to actually do actions for you. So it could be cool.
Right on.
Yeah.
I'm sold, actually, listening to that. I want to try it.
Great. They didn't have a demo, so that was a disappointing thing. When I went all the way there, did not actually have any demo, so I did not know anything about how it actually is going to end up working. But, you know, it is exciting. I feel like, there's an idea there, and I hope it works because it sounds cool.
We only have to wait a few months?
Yeah, till March.
Great. Okay, Adrian, what's the thing that you saw this week that blew you away or made you laugh?
We just tested it, and like Julian and I made a video, made a test. I am mildly afraid that Segway is going to, everyone is going to think I'm a Segway paid actor or something. But I had to be physically dragged away from the new Segway go-kart. The sun was setting. It was, you know, approaching freezing temperatures. Segway had started packing everything away. And I was like, no, don't make me go. It's a 3-in-1 go-kart. So not only is it a go-kart that you can actually, you know, like ride around on the streets. And I have been testing electric bikes with Segway. And then the Segway PR spokesperson just like leaned down and he put it in race mode. And he was like, I saw you testing those bikes. I think this is what you want to do. And that was exactly what I did want to do. It's so cute and light. The pickup is so fast. And then when you're done, you know, doing that, which you may never be, the back decouples into a hoverboard. So, you know, when you're in a space where they might arrest you for driving a go-kart, you just simply, you know, swap out for your hoverboard and just start hovering around people. But then when you're done with that, it turns into a racing simulator. It's compatible with most major gaming consoles and platforms. So you can, like, when it's too cold to race outside, as it was slowly beginning to be here in Vegas, you can just go inside and just play all of your standard racing games. You can play with your friends online. Like, if you're getting really sick of trying to keep up with your friends who have like full-on racing sims on your like dinky little computer or whatever, you just get a Segway go-kart and you just start racing them in your home. It was incredible. Like when I was like stomping on the gas, like the whole cart was just like flexing every time I saw 360 haptic feedback. Like I was trying to drift and like smashing into like the walls of tunnels. There was a lot of smashing. You are the one who told me to try to drift, Julian. I don't take full responsibility for this. I was like, I saw the Fast and the Furious 3. I know exactly how this is done. And it was like full 360 haptic feedback. Like by the time they could pull me off of this thing, Segway had unfortunately packed up all the scooters and Julian could no longer try them. But I regret nothing. This is what CES is for. It's for going really fast and frustrating your coworkers.
I mean, the go-kart was genuinely one of the things that they keep talking about it and you're like, it does what? And the back decouples into a hoverboard. I don't know why anyone would want the hoverboard part of it, but that was cool to see. And then the fact that you bring it in and you plug your go-kart into your game console and then you use it as a racing sim. It was so weird, but also makes a lot of sense. It was kind of cool. Like you're not going to use your go-kart all the time. The fact that now I can bring it in and actually have a use for it inside my house and with my racing games, I thought that was really cool and smart.
It solves the problem of go-kart storage because you can just simply store it in the middle of your living room. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, there were so many features of the go-kart. Like, I was just like, so, I mean, it was in a tiny parking lot. You know, I could not go full throttle in the parking lot. But then when you're like just stomping on the gas and you could just feel the whole cart flex and shudder. And I was like, that's right. This is me. I'm exactly like the Indy. I'm exactly like the Formula One autonomous drivers. I am Max Verstappen. Like, it ruled. It was awesome. That's I'm really amazing. Nailing the CES.
Are they coming out with it soon?
Yes. Oh my gosh. You can pre-order them now, actually, and they will be shipping on February 1st.
So I know what to get you for Orthodox Christmas,
I guess. Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras. Right. Yeah, your household celebrates Mardi Gras.
Yes, right. We do. I was about to burst into singing, but then I decided not to because I'm really mature and restrained. Please someone stop me.
Well, my pick is the same pick that I have every year, which is my bed. My bed is absolutely the most exciting thing I've seen at CES this year.
Yeah, it really is.
To be fair, it is a better bed than last year.
That's true. Yes, we did upgrade, get the hotel upgrade package this year. Thanks, Condé Nast. But really, this show is a big show. It's like physically large. It takes hours some days to get from one side of the event space to the other side. You walk 3 or 4 miles a day easily.
Yeah.
You sleep maybe 5 hours a night. And as a journalist, you get here 2 days earlier than everybody else, and you have to cover it for a lot longer than most people spend here. So it is a grind. And thanks everybody for sitting here late at night and recording this, because we're all very tired.
It is the job.
Not me. I am gaining more energy as I go on.
Yeah, we'll keep you away from the go-kart simulators from now on. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. Adrian, Julian, Jeremy, thank you for being here. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for coming all the way to Las Vegas to sit here with me.
And happy birthday, Mike.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Guys, we don't talk about my birthday on the podcast for OPSEC reasons. Did you get the memo? All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. 39 once again. And thank you all for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on the various social medias. Just check the show notes. Our producer is the excellent Boone Ashworth. And we will be back in the studio with a professionally recorded episode of Gadget Lab next week. And until then, goodbye.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here, stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click Here.
And liftoff.
Click Here, every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.